This is a replay of the Tuesday night, October 3rd WGN show. We started at 11. If you don't hear yourself on it, it's because you didn't call. I hope you'll rectify that soon. We're live Monday through Thursday evenings, and unless sports preempt us, that's from 10 to 1 Central. Dial 888-876-5593. My toll-free number from OneVoip. For the world's best customer service, it's OneVoip. Check them out at the number 1-VOIP.com. You'll be really glad you did.
Direct from the edge of the lunatic fringe, it's the Raleigh James Show.
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. We've got a couple hours to spend together. I promised Nick from Baltimore we would get to the bottom of Prince and Princess Buster, and we will. And I promised you I'd tell you more about Nat Kendrick and Duda mashed potatoes. So all that. But before we get to that, I want to talk to Bruce, because he has been in our prayers and on our minds. And so when we didn't hear the next night, I thought, uh-oh, it was surgery. So Bruce, was it?
Yeah, it sure was.
What happened? Tell me.
It sure was. Well, you know, they spent 2 days trying to figure it out with the x-rays and the tubes down throat and that. And finally, they took an x-ray one morning. It was so bad, I was so thirsty. When I got to the contrast fluid,
yeah,
I chugged it.
Oh, I'll bet. I'll bet.
And the lady said, nobody ever chugged that.
Well,
anyway,
yeah.
Yeah, the surgeon came in and she said, we're going to have to do something. And they came in like 9 o'clock in the morning and did, you know, emergency surgery. I had a triangulated hernia.
Oh, my God.
It was killing off a part of my intestine.
Oh, God.
So they had to took out the hernia and everything and took a foot of my intestine out.
Wow. Okay, of your small intestine, I take it.
Small intestine.
Well, you can lose a foot. That's not terrible.
Well, this is the second time I lost a foot.
Yeah, but, well, thank God, if it had been your colon, we'd have another conversation, but your small intestines are fairly forgiving on this. All right, so
Yes. They
were able to reconnect it?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay, now you're just wondering whether scar tissue will cause another blockage, and only time will tell.
Well, that's what she said. She said there's still a lot of scar tissue in there.
Yeah.
A lot of that mesh and stuff in there, but
yeah.
Right now I feel better now than I have all summer. This has been nagging me all summer, the pain, and I really could never put my finger on it, you know. And
I'm not surprised, because to some degree it becomes chronic and low level, and you know something's wrong, but you just don't know what. So it is a relief. And is there anything they can give you to inhibit scar tissue from forming?
You know, I don't know. I have to go see a gastroenterologist.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, I'll have to ask him.
Yeah. Well, hopefully this is the end of it and nothing will happen and it'll be smooth sailing from here on out. We just keep our fingers crossed, because nobody knows.
I was just so lucky. The lady was such a good surgeon.
That is good.
She just put it online. She said, you could have this, you could end up with this, you could end up with this, and I didn't end up with any of it. I'm really feeling good. They're talking about sending me home tomorrow.
Excellent. That's just excellent. Well, yeah, keep her number on speed dial, that's for sure.
Oh, yeah. So, no, I just want to let you guys know I'm still kicking.
Oh, I'm so glad. Well, I was concerned when I hadn't heard from you. I kind of thought, that was surgery, because I didn't expect you'd call that night if you had surgery that morning. I mean, that would have been amazing. But I'm so glad to hear from you. You're sounding fine.
Yeah, I'm feeling a lot better the last few. I'm finally on, I got onto solid foods today.
Well, so. Good. What'd you have?
What did I have? I don't even know. I had cream of wheat for lunch.
Oh,
and
yeah.
For supper, I didn't feel like... They have a menu here, but the menu is more rich for what my taste. I had macaroni and cheese and mashed potatoes for supper.
Well, nothing like some carbohydrates. It certainly was filling.
Yeah.
That's right. All right.
Yeah.
Well, what the heck? Hospital food has never been known for its culinary excellence, so you'll be out of there hopefully soon and eating whatever you want.
This hospital has a setup where when you're a regular patient, when you're hungry, you just call a number, and they have a menu, and you order it, and they bring it up to you.
And it tastes pretty good?
It's not bad, but it's like, you know, cheeseburgers, stuff like that, fried chicken, stuff that I'm not going to eat right now.
Right, right, of course, of course. Well, as long as it's not Jell-O.
Oh, God, I ate a whole bunch of Jell-O. The second night I was on Clear Liquid, and I had... Four Jell-Os and two Italian ices.
Well, the Italian ices are kind of nice, but the Jell-O, well, yeah. you're stronger than me, that's for sure.
And I had ginger ale, and I haven't had ginger ale in years.
Yeah, yeah, and
that's kind of cool.
And it's not like you remember it either. They've really got to get the right brand of ginger ale, because anymore they just don't taste like they used to.
No, but at least it was something that got the slime in your mouth, you know.
Well, right, and carbonation. There's nothing like carbonation.
Yeah.
Well, good, good. Well, hopefully it's smooth sailing from here on out. I'm so glad you called.
Okay, well, thank you, and
all right.
Have a good evening.
Keep us posted. Thanks. Appreciate it, Bruce.
Okay.
All right, so Bruce is going home. Yay. All right. So I figured there was a surgery involved, but it sounds like that was for the best. Because, yeah, you can have problems that just, as I say, they turn into chronic, and you really don't want to do anything about them, and you don't, and until you have to. And then you realize, wow, I should have done this a long time ago. Yeah, well, good for Bruce. All right, so 888-876-5593 is 8888-RALEIGH. And Eduardo is in Florida. What's happening tonight, Eduardo?
Yeah, Raleigh, a couple of things. First, I wanted to start on the signature room that is closed. They abruptly closed, and now they have employees that are going to be suing them. There was even a vendor that paid, I think it was like $3,000, but they have no refund. And I'm wondering, are they going to have any legal recourse?
Probably not.
For that?
Well, here's the deal. Who is the entity that signed them, and who owns it?
Oh.
You see, where I'm going with this is that even if we talked about this and felt there was precedent that a suit could be successful, you can only get money if money exists, and people can be judgment-proof. So when somebody's filed to close a place because of bankruptcy or whatever, get in line, brother, and maybe you'll get a nickel on the dollar. So the first thing to determine before you even go any further is there any money to be had out of this?
Yeah. Well, I heard the other day that there had to be a 60-day window. No?
Well, you know, there again, and I know there, and for individuals not from the Chicago area, the signature room at the former John Hancock building abruptly closed. And so you had a number of people who had put down money to reserve the restaurant for an occasion, like a wedding or something like that. And they're saying, hey, we want our money back if we can't have a place. And so that's the that's pretty much the deal. It was on Facebook, and there was a sign on the elevators. And that was about it. And so it's you know, up on the 95th floor and all that. And so you've got people who've been paying them monthly for events they're planning to have, and needless to say, they're in shock. And I know WGN TV9 has been doing reports on this, and I think they've talked to the Illinois Restaurant Association and the owners of Signature Room, but I don't know what they've discovered, if anything. But as I say, you've got two different things. Number one is, do you have any possibility of succeeding in legal action? And if the answer is yes, then before you invest the time and money in that, is there going to be any money that you can collect? Or are people judgment-proof by virtue of the circumstances?
Yeah, but they did also get a PPP loan.
Well, that doesn't mean they have it now, though. You see, there again, you're talking about the way you'd go after it legally, but if it's not there, and, you know, it depends how much you want to spend to go after this and what's the likelihood that you could get something. And so, obviously, when you have this type of a sudden closure, and it was just abrupt, where last Thursday, that was it. So I don't know enough about it to know whether there's money to be had or whether there's action that could be brought. And those are two different things.
Yeah. So I personally think that they closed because of what's going on around everywhere as far as crime, and people didn't want to come down.
There's probably a lot of reasons. It debuted as the Signature Room 30 years ago, right now, and it had obviously been at the John Hancock Tower going back to like 1970, and I think it was just known as the 95th before that. So, you know, they have 30 years of tradition. I would assume that they didn't do this, you know, lightly. You know, they say it was with heavy heart. Well, it was probably also with light wallet. And I think you could probably look at a number of things that would have led to that. I'd like to know, and I don't have any of the information, but there's so many things that could cause a business to close. And obviously the number one thing is you don't have the clientele to keep the business going, but that's not the only thing. You know, there's so many other possibilities. So, you know, like I say, there'll be lawsuits. I mean, anybody, you know, in America, anybody can sue anybody, you know, but again, what's the likelihood that you'll prevail? And I believe the union already said, you know, of the people, I guess 100 union employees were laid off or something. Well, we're going to file a lawsuit, which I guess they did on Monday. I haven't seen it, obviously, so I don't know what's in it. And that's where you got your 60 days notice. Well, you might be required to do this, but again, if your defense is that we have absolutely no funds and that can be verified, then that's a different story. So, again, I don't know what the particulars are. I'd love to.
Yeah. Tomorrow they got the, as you're probably aware from the news, the that national alert text.
Oh,
tomorrow?
Well, of course, you know, I own radio stations, so absolutely.
Right. I figured you would be up on that, yeah.
We do this, you know, we didn't do it last year. I'm not sure about the year before. I'd have to look at my notes, but it had been delayed, you know, COVID and all that. But this has gone on. This is probably the fourth or fifth time we've done an NPT, and it'll happen at 11:20 in the morning. And each one of them is designed to test a different facet of emergency notification. And so broadcasters had to provide form 1 month ago saying, yeah, I'm set up to do this and here's my equipment and yeah, I'll be there. Right?
Okay.
And then tomorrow, right after 11:20, you're supposed to file a quick form 2. Now, you've got 24 hours to file it, but unfortunately, the FCC computer systems have been overloaded before. So my advice to fellow broadcasters is file that puppy at 11:22. You know, I mean, do it quickly. I know I will, but I'm manic about those kind of things. In any event, it's just going to be a couple of questions. You know, did you get it? Did you broadcast it? And then there is Form 3, which you have a month to fill out with some detailed information on how it was. You know, the interesting thing is that the FEMA's CAP IPAWS system works very well. It's computerized. Where the weak link is in America these days is the broadcast end of EAS. And by that, I don't mean the individual stations. I mean the municipalities and the states that are responsible for sending this out over their public service monitors, because every county has, obviously, some type of emergency management. They got a department for this. And years ago, they had someone heading that department who understood what EAS was and how the equipment worked and, you know, just a modicum about radio enough to be able to do this. Well, that guy, you know, died, quit, got fired, whatever, and he was replaced. And then that guy quit. And then that guy quit. And so what you have now is five generations later, some guy who the most he knows about radio is there's one in his truck, all right? And he has absolutely no idea how this works. And, you know, that's why we see these problems. I mean, Maui, in part, we've seen other ones where it's the it's the municipalities, not the broadcasters. In fact, in the Maui situation, the broadcasters were the heroes there more than anything, the local broadcasters. But these state associations that are supposed to really have EAS county by county in shape, they are the weak link. I'm not sure, but I don't think tomorrow's test is focused on them anyway. It has been in the past, but the last one was focused more computer. So we're going to see what happens, and I'll be happy to tell you tomorrow night.
You'll comment, we can comment afterwards. For people in different areas.
Yeah. Yeah, so, and that's the way it is. And, you know, in previous tests, there have been times when an entire state wouldn't have gotten them, you know, things like that. But usually it isn't that dire. But, yeah, there will be issues. And that's what it's designed to test. And I think I'm all for it, because I think, in time of calm, that's to find out if your system works when you're going to be in time of trouble. But I increasingly am disappointed with the emergency management, departments at virtually all the counties in America. Very few of them are up to speed on this. fool that I am, years ago, I volunteered to try and help our guys at the county where I've got stations. And so they were clueless, absolutely clueless. I mean, so I brought them a receiver and I hooked it up to their EAS unit. They had and Sage Endec and did all this, right? And so anyway, then I said, okay, now you've got to go get a radio. You know, I want my radio back. And he said, no, you can't have it. I said, what do you mean? Well, you made this work. You can't stop. I said, no. Any radio will make it work. You just need to hook it up to an antenna like I did, and here's how it is. Because the other thing is, in our county, they actually tied antennas to the grounding system and tied that to literally, I don't remember if it was a plumbing or what, but something that created the world's worst interference. In any event, I said, no, I've told you how to do this. Well, anyway, the bottom line is the guy wouldn't give me my radio back. He finally said, we'll send you money, whatever you want, but you can't have your radio back now. He said, you can buy another one. I said, no, actually, that's kind of a favorite radio. I like that one, and they don't make it. They haven't in years. Well, we don't care. We're not giving it back, and they never did.
And we need to bring back Radio Shack.
Yeah, really, exactly. I said, hey, call the Sea Crane Company. No, we have to have yours. And so, in fact, John and I were talking about it last night. I said, I missed that radio. But I'm sad to say it didn't help them all that much. It should have, but, you know, it required a little more involvement. But I can't fully blame the guys they hired, because they have absolutely no experience with this and no one to teach them.
Okay.
So, those are the interesting stories, but I'll have to take a look. I haven't yet. I mean, I'll be ready at 11:20, believe me. I will know on three different stations exactly what happened. Also, because I'm nosy, I have enough radios that I will know what happens on my competitors, because last time neither of them ran it. So we'll see.
Okay, well, I'll look forward to hearing the feedback.
All right, you'll get a full report coming up. Thanks.
Okay, Raleigh, thank you very much.
All right, so that's where we'll pick it up. We'll get James in Oregon. We'll get you. We'll get the Prince. We'll start with the Prince Buster story on WGN Radio.
The Ten Commandments of Man, given to a man through the inspiration of I, Prince Buster. Shalt have no other man but me. 2. Thou shalt not encourage no man to make love to you, neither kiss nor caress you, for I am your man, a very jealous man, and is ready to lay low any other man that may intrude in our love. 3. Remember to kiss and caress me, honor and obey me in my every woman fancy, 7 days a week and twice on Sundays, cause at no time will I ever be tired of IT hit. Honor my name so that every other woman may honor it also. 5. Thou shalt not provoke me to anger, or my wrath will
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. Yes, politically incorrect to say the least. And when it came out in 1963 on the Blue Beat label in Jamaica, nobody really noticed a whole lot at the time. And they all knew Prince Buster already anyway. That was Cecil Campbell, who was born in the ghetto in Kingston in 1938. And he had been musically involved pretty much since his school years. And originally, it wasn't so much making the music as well as amplifying it. He became involved in running a sound system. And so he was doing that and did a number of things on location, including providing security and handling ticket receipts and all that. So he was more of an infrastructure guy. And then he thought, you know, I'm doing this for other people. I'll try to do it for myself. And he opened his own venue, Voice of the People. And the deal was he applied to the Farm Work Program, believe it or not, a guest worker scheme for the agricultural sector, with the intention of buying music for a sound system. But needless to say, when and the government realized it wasn't agriculture, they thought, well, or not. And so that's when he said, you know, I'm just going to record my own music then. If I can't buy other people's music, I'll just do my own. And he got a couple ragtag players, and so it began. His first single was 1961 and did a few things. In fact, probably released well over half a dozen, maybe a dozen singles in 3 years. But in 63, where he probably had half a dozen records in that year alone, here was the Ten Commandments. Yes. Well, as I say, that didn't do very much. And at some point, this became known to the point that other labels were somewhat interested. And the first one to take a shot at this was an Answer record, the Ten Commandments woman, on Sid Nathan's King Records. Now, believe me, King didn't come up with it. Good old Cecil, Prince Buster did. And he and a friend wrote it and recorded it. And I've tried my damnedest to find out who Princess Buster is, and I don't know. Obviously, well, I shouldn't say obviously, maybe she isn't Jamaican, but she sure sounds it. In any event, King in 67 came out with the Answer, like I say. And by then, you know, in 67, now this record's getting interesting to several people. But as far as Princess Buster, well, you can imagine her take on it.
Ten commandments of man given to a man through the inspiration of I, Prince Buster.
The Ten Commandments of woman given to man by me, Princess Buster. Listen, darling prince, now that I have heard your Ten Commandments, will you please listen to mine? Commandment one, thou shalt have no other woman but me. Provoke me to anger, or you shall have no peace at night. 3. Thou shalt not encourage no woman to make love to you, neither kiss nor caress you. 'Cause like any other woman, I am a jealous woman, and even more jealous now that I am married to your Royal Highness, Prince Buster. Commandment 4. Thou shalt take me out 7 days a week and twice on Sunday, 'cause at no time will I ever be tired of wearing fine clothes, eating fine food, and driving high-class cars. 'Cause I am your woman, a funny woman, and refuse to go out shabby while I am married to you, Mr. Prince Buster.
That's why I'm married to you, Mr. Prince Buster. All right, so she's telling him. As I say, it's starting to get some traction, but not really. But then next thing you know, Nikki Lee comes along. And this was local to Miami, but he was a jock on Whammy. And I in fact, Carol even said, well, you got to tell me the Nikki Lee story. Well, Whammy was the second radio station in Miami to be all soul. And it didn't last very long because when, well, actually, it did last a few years, but let's back up. When Whammy signed on, it signed on as Top 40. And that was fine until Roundsville sold WMBM, which was the first soul station, and put WFUN on the air and basically quickly decimated Whammy's market share. And so Whammy figured, all right, well, we'll just go soul. And so they were the second station to WMBM. They were Whammy 1260 in Miami. And they hired a number of disc jockeys, and they were very good at promoting. In fact, when they hired Nikki Lee, one of the first things they made him do was stay awake. And he did one of those wake-a-thons. In fact, he was, I don't know that he still is, but he was in the Guinness Book of Records for quite a while because he stayed awake longer than anybody else, against everybody's advice, doctors, nurses, and the local hospitals. But he did it, and that was just one of many. They used to buy the inside of the buses, the advertisements that would be along the walls of the buses, because at that point, you know, public transportation was still very, very big among most people, particularly people of color in Miami. So they knew they were going to find everybody on the buses, and you couldn't get on a bus where there wasn't a Whammy in Miami billboard, and it would show a picture of one of the disc jockeys. Usually it was either Fred Hanna or Nikki Lee. And Nikki got involved with all of the local denizens, Henry Stone at TK and Steve Alamo and Clarence Reed at, you know, he had a number of players who all got together. He started to release records. And so next thing you know, Nikki Lee has released a version of the Ten Commandments of Man. Now, at this point, most listeners never heard the Prince Buster version. Yeah, but in 1967, you can imagine there was a little impact locally when Nikki Lee came up with this.
The Ten Commandments of Man, given to woman through the divine inspiration of I, the Nick, with the solid kick. Commandment one. Thou shalt have no other man but me. Commandment 2. Thou shalt not encourage no man to make love to you, neither kiss you, nor caress you, for I'm your man, a very jealous man, and is ready to lay low any other man that may intrude in our love. Commandment 3.
All right, so you get the idea, and that was, by the way, Steve Alamo co-produced that. And it, locally, it absolutely made impact, but it wasn't the only thing. This guy came up with a number of things, including an album. And Black is Beautiful, yeah, 1968, and several things. But the upshot of this is RCA got a little interested in Prince Buster and the Ten Commandments of Man to Woman and the Princess Buster answer record. So in 68, they put out a two-sided. One side was Prince Buster, and the other side was Princess Buster. And I'm not sure where Nick picked it up, but he mentioned that the flip side was Princess Buster. So that, oh, he had the RCA reissue from 1968. That failed to make much impact as well. But those who you know, were fans of it, well, it has lasting history to this day. As far as Prince Buster, like I say, he was prolific, really. And he remained in Jamaica, and in the 70s he became a Muslim, and at that point he found it difficult to tailor his style towards a Rastafari audience. But he was actually in the movie The Harder They Come. He was a cameo role as a DJ. But what he did was he moved to Miami at that point and ran a jukebox company for a while, and retired from the music business as far as on stage, but behind stage did a number of things. And in the interim, because he had been so prolific earlier in his career, of course, who catches on to this? The UK. Yeah, it wasn't Northern Soul, but it was the ska revival. And while he remained out of the limelight, a lot of his music didn't. And he was awarded Order of Distinction ultimately by the Jamaican government for his contribution to music and a number of other things. And sadly, he left us. He died in a hospital in Miami, and it was, I think it was about well, let me, let's see, 2016, there you go, after having heart problems, and he actually had been having strokes earlier. I think he had one in 2009 where he no longer could walk, and then it was just like dominoes, one after another, and then in 2016 finally died. But you're talking about at least a dozen albums, and as far as in the early Jamaican days, tons of things, including, you know, providing the sound systems. So that's the deal. As for Nicky Lee, he was on Whammy until they were sold. And like I say, they went R&B after WFUN debuted as top 40 and stayed that way until Jack Roth, who had 1550 WRIZ, bought the 1260 frequency. And that was pretty much the end of Whammy, and WWOK debuted on it. But meanwhile, Nicky Lee went to Tampa. Actually, that's not true. Went to Orlando, and he was on OKB, the Nicky Lee Show, and continued. And he's no longer with us. But it's interesting because one of the denizens of Miami radio had put up an air check of Nicky from the 60s, and I was so pleased that his family, his daughters and granddaughter, all commented that, you know, they heard it, they liked it, and I thought, well, that's terrific. The Nick with the positive kick lives on. Now, you can hear the air checks, of course. You know, all that kind of stuff is on YouTube, and I think the one that they feature is 1968 in December, and let you hear a little of it. But what really intrigued me was the spot for AMCO. We'll get there.
You got the power. You got the power.
You got the power.
In this life of mine, you're getting stronger by the hour.
You got the power.
These are the mighty Esquires.
You got the power. You make me feel so good.
Nice to hear him play the Esquires.
There they go, the Platters with a brand new one that matters. Maybe one called The Fear of Losing You. 23 minutes, proceeding to 4 o'clock. I have the Nick with the positive kick, stone and power. Hey, got some info on the show.
Jalico Carpet, 741 Northwest 54th Street, has a reintroduction sale.
All right, never mind the carpet company. Like I say, it was the AMCO spot, and I do not know if it was a local spot or a national spot or what was the deal on that. So I will play that. But according to John, I got to play my own right about now. So yeah, in moments, we'll reconvene on WGN Radio. WGN Radio, I'm Raleigh James. We only got about a minute left this hour. So I'll put Nicky Lee and everybody else on hold until next hour and find out what it is that Jan wants to hear so she don't have to sit through the news. So Jan in Dallas, welcome back to WGN Radio.
Oh, thank you. Blessings to you and John. Joe Cook and the Thrillers, Peanuts.
Peanuts, okay.
Okay.
Absolutely. Have you ever heard Joe do a ballad?
No. In fact, I heard you talking about him last night or so.
Yeah.
And no, I never have. And
I'll play you one of those, too.
Oh, that would be great. Thank you
so
much.
Okay, thanks. My pleasure. Good deal. All right, so let's see. Are we going to quickly? No, we're not going to quickly. I know we'll never make it. But you know what I think I do have time for, actually, is this AMCO commercial. As I say, I don't know whether they did it locally or whether it was meant for national, but I thought to myself, well, good for them.
Hi, you male species. This is your girl, Joni, speaking for AMCO Transmission Specialist, the world's largest transmission specialist with service centers from coast to coast. Now, baby, if your transmission is leaking or making funny noises, you won't get me in that machine, and have a breakdown on some lonely road. Go where the men know what it's all about. They'll check that machine over with a free road test, and AMCO will handle everything in one day. Lady, sweetie, don't let that man pull that old car trouble trick on you. Run to a phone and call AMCO. That's AAMCO, AMCO.
You'll get one day's service at any of the 12 AMCO centers in Dade and Broward County.
Top that. All right, we'll pick it up right there on WGN Radio.
Do-be-do-wah, do-be-do-wah.
WGN Radio, I'm Raleigh James. There he is, Little Joe Cook, Little Joe and the Thrillers, 1957, on OK. That was the second record he released, and it was a big hit. The first one was Do the Slop, it did nothing, but he'd been singing long before that, quite a while long before that. He was born in 1922, and he had done a lot of, like many people, gospel, and even the falsetto was noted in his gospel recordings as far as that goes, including Say a Prayer for the Boys in Korea on Apex. And when he decided to go secular, it was interesting because right at that time, Sam Cooke had left the Soul Stirrers and he was offered a post there. And he said, nah, I want to try secular. And like I say, so they did that Do the Slop, which did nothing. But then it was minor dance craze, but for about a minute there. Then Peanuts. Peanuts was on American Bandstand and just like wildfire took off. And there's two people who credit Lil Joe with an inspiration, being an inspiration to them, and that was Frankie Valli, in fact, who recorded Peanuts with the Four Seasons early on, and Lou Christie. Both of them said, man, heard Lil Joe, and that was it. Now, Lil Joe followed Peanuts with another up-tempo falsetto record, and I don't know why it didn't hit, but I always thought The Angels Keep Calling Me was a cute little song. Dozens more like it that never failed to delight, but also did fail to chart. That said, as I was saying to Jan in Dallas, who requested Peanuts, he was wonderful with ballads and just absolutely not known for them. In fact, Don't Leave Me Alone, Lincoln Chase wrote that. The guy who was involved with the Shirley Ellis and Congress Records, all that. Anyway, wrote Don't Leave Me Alone, and I thought Little Joe did a terrific job with it.
Don't leave me alone. Never leave me alone. Always stay by my side. My dear, please don't leave me alone. Don't you ever leave me alone. I need you, I need you, I need you, I need you. Every night and every day. You'll always hear me say, my dear. Don't leave me alone. When the night grows near, I want you right here.
So there's another side, a little Joe Cook you probably didn't know. In any event, his run on OK stopped about 1961 because, like I say, never followed up Peanuts with another hit. And at that point, the group broke up. I think he was briefly on 20th Century, maybe a few other labels, but ultimately that was it. So he went out touring with B.B. King and Bobby Blue Bland, and that's also when he had formed the Sherrys for his daughters and Tammy Montgomery. We played that Pop 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 Pie last night. Long about that time after that, he decided to move to Boston because he got an offer to have a residency at the Cantab Lounge in Cambridge. And in fact, he was there until he retired in 2007. And yeah, literally. and just a Cambridge icon at that point. And devoted fans would show up. His Cadillac, it was, you know, yellow, of course, for a peanut, had a peanut logo on it and all that, was right in front. And so, yeah, died of cancer in 2014, still singing almost to his dying day, 91 years old. And so that's little Joe Cook. Yeah, a South Philly original, to say the least. So a lot more than just peanuts. All right, so 888-876-5593. I have not forgotten about Nat Kendrick, and I will tell you about that. But we've got James in Oregon wanting to weigh in. Say hello, James.
Hey, good evening. Hey, a couple weeks ago I told you about, I was contacted about some kind of a trial thing for vision.
Yes.
And I received a call today from a man that's the project manager, I believe, on it. But he told me he's a psychiatrist or a psychologist. But it's through the Chicago Lighthouse.
Okay.
So, yeah, that's it. Because I said, well, if I put this out, how do people get a hold of you? So he said, well, you know, he just asked for him at Chicago Lighthouse. His name's Frank Lang, is what he said his name is.
Okay.
I can describe what it.
Yeah, he's a. And by the way, I just took a look. He's a psychotherapist at the Chicago Lighthouse, so that should be fairly easy. All right.
Yeah, but so after he talked to me about it, I said I don't think I'm going to be a candidate for that. But what they do is it's brain surgery. They insert into your brain these, I'll call them diodes of sorts. And how they work, I don't know. But he says, like, when you look at an object, you can see the object, but you can't, like, if I was to look at you, I could see you there, but I couldn't see your features. I couldn't see your face, your eyes, your nose, mouth, and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
But I would see an image there.
Okay.
Or if I looked at a boxes or something like that on the counter. Okay. I could see the boxes, but I wouldn't see what that box was. You know, if it was a box of cereal or, you know, mashed potatoes or whatever. You know, you won't be able to tell. But I think that was a little bit intense for me, because it sounds like more for people that have lost their eyes, and not just their vision, but their eyes, you know. It might give them some hope, but the way he was talking was that it's you know, they're working on it. They're trying to get it better as they go. So, you know, you're going to be a guinea pig in this thing, you know. So,
well, there again, it depends on your situation to whether that's that's worth a shot. It very well may be. I don't know. But, I know that the Chicago Lighthouse's main phone number is 312-666-1331. And I'll put that on Raleigh.net, too, for people who are interested. And interesting. Yeah. So they are spearheading this program, this trial?
Yes. Well, I guess so, because I asked him, where is it being done through and that? And he told me the Chicago Lighthouse. So I don't know. I didn't know if there were a clinic or I've heard of them, but I thought they were just like where you could go if you were vision impaired or whatever, you could go and they would help you get you devices or, you know,
well,
seeing eye dogs. So.
Yeah, they've got over 40 programs. From, you know, optimizing remaining vision to, like you say, programs for people who otherwise have no shot at that. And so, in fact, ChicagoLighthouse.org is the website, and that will. I don't see any trials. I just was trying to look for that to see if I could see a trial on it, but I don't easily see that. Now, that's not to say it's not not there, but I do. I do have a page for Dr. Frank Lane, though. It's Lane, by the way. Lane.
Is it Lane? Okay.
Yeah. According to this, I assume that's the same one.
I asked him. I said, "What if I put this information out? Can they call you?" And he said, "Yeah, they can call me."
Okay.
And just call him. Now, if either he or his assistant would answer, I'm sure. You know.
Okay. Yeah. So,
let's
see. And he does in-person counseling at the Lighthouse Chicago location. And he's originally a Florida boy, went to St. Leo. And a number of people who are in healthcare administration actually have gone to St. Leo. So it's an unusual school for that.
Where's St. Leo at?
Oh, St. Leo? No, it's not actually. It's it's up in Florida, not all that far from Tampa. And it is one of the oldest Catholic colleges. And for a while, they were almost endangered, like many of them. And they were going to buy Marymount in L.A., but ultimately won a good fit, and Marymount closed. But they continued, and they're doing a lot of distance learning now at St. Leo. But it's not what I call a high-ranking school, but it has, like I say, when I saw this, this is the second person this week I saw in healthcare who went to St. Leo for that. So,
that's cool.
So yeah. Anyway,
I'm still waiting on the stem cell thing, but because my vision, it's strange. And I say I can see my hands at times. It kind of comes and goes. I can't see anything beyond a foot from me.
Yeah.
You know, even when I can see my hands and stuff, and it's strange. I just don't know why it does it. It comes in and then it might be there for a few seconds, or it might be a 5 minutes. Or so, and then it goes away again.
Yeah. So, no, that's not that's not as unusual as you'd think, as far as that goes. When you're saying you can see a foot, I assume about a foot. I assume there is absolutely nothing in terms of lenses that would help you see further.
No.
Yeah.
No. Well, see, in 2014, when I was working in Germany, I had my lenses replaced.
Mm-hmm.
And that, so I know they're good, the lenses, but this stuff was, they were treating me for diabetic issues.
Yeah.
And I think it just, yeah.
Yeah,
and,
that's tough.
And I think that's what caused it, you know.
Very possibly. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But I just... I didn't know if it'd be another.
Yeah,
three
no,
years
it's
heard
it,
from those people or
right.
not.
But. It's good information. I'm going to put the contact information on Raleigh.net, and so anybody who wants to investigate it further can do that.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right, James.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank
you. Appreciate it.
Bye.
All right. Good stuff. So yeah, Dr. Frank Lane at the Chicago Lighthouse. But I would assume, based upon what James is saying, that this would sort of be a last resort thing. But if you're at a point where it is a last resort, it might bring you something you're not otherwise going to get. So 888-876-5593 on WGN Radio. WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James, and yeah, that's Nat Kendrick. Do the mashed potatoes. Now, here is the deal. If you think that's James Brown in the background, you'd be wrong here. You're doing a shout-out.
Mashed potatoes, yeah.
It would have been, and actually, if you listen real closely, you can probably hear Brown's voice under it, but Henry Stone, and we'll get to how Henry was involved in this project, realized that, oh, man, his voice is too recognizable, and I know Sid Nathan very well, and I will never hear the end of this. So, you know, here comes Henry into the studio. You cannot do that. You cannot use your voice on this record. Yeah, Nathan will be on us, yeah, like whites on rice. And I cleaned that up a little. And so he said, we got to leave your voice off. We got to make this an instrumental. But at the same time, I thought, you know, I really like the idea of someone shouting mashed potatoes, not to mention all the other vegetables. But it had to be someone else. And so when James Brown saw the logic of why it shouldn't be him, he got on board. And at that point, King Coleman, back to the Whammy story, was on Whammy. And although, wait a minute, he wouldn't have been then. He would have been on either FEC or MBM. He later was on Whammy, but okay, probably I'll go with MBM just for the hell of it, when they were on 800. In any event, he got King Coleman, Carlton King Coleman, and got him to do the recording and put it out on Dade. But there's more to this story, and that is that Henry Stone, who later was TK and all the disco stuff that you know, was Tone Record Distributors in Miami, and he had relationships with most of the independent labels, and including King, obviously, and knew most of the acts, and he knew James Brown. And James Brown calls him one day and says, I got a problem. And my problem is that Sid Nathan thinks that I am a singles act. He refuses to put out an album on me. And, the album in question, by the way, is Live at the Apollo, which James Brown actually financed on his own, because there was no way that Sid Nathan was going to do it. So, in any event, he said, and at this point, Sid Nathan, you know, doesn't even want me recording with the JBs, which was the backup band he got together. And so he said, you got to help me. And so, in fact, what had happened was Brown went to Sid Nathan before this and said, I want our next single to be an instrumental. And, you know, the popular mashed potato that you heard. And bottom line is that Sid Nathan said, no, you are not. You know, you're not going to record just the JBs. It's not going to be an instrumental. You're the act. And so that's when James goes to Henry and says, you know, he won't let me do it. And Henry said, well, we can do that. And so this is 1958. And at that point, and this is interesting, it actually was Dukoff Studios, and I guarantee you that's true. And earlier in Henry Stone's life, he always referred to Dukoff Studios and actually said at that point, Criteria wasn't up and running. But in later stories, I heard him saying it was Criteria. Now, the reality is both of these studios came about in the same year, 1958. Of course, Criteria, the more famous to this day, obviously. But both of them were started by big band musicians. In the case of Criteria, it was Mac Emmerman. But in the case of Dukoff, it was Bobby Dukoff, who, if you're a sax player, this guy was an absolute giant. In fact, mouthpieces that he made himself were used by everybody. And when I say everybody, I mean everybody from, who should we say? I'm trying to think of a couple people. I know. Wait a minute. John bothers me at times. All right. Kenny G or Boots Randolph, all of whom have used him. So we'll pick it up there with Bobby Dukoff, who moves to Miami and says, I think I'm going to open a studio. And we'll tell you the rest of the story coming up on WGN Radio.
I'm really such a boy, and you don't want
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. Yeah, Joe Pope and the Tams. Atlanta's own, of course, beach music royalty and Untimey. Yeah, it was Jimmy P on the south side who wanted to hear that and several others. We'll probably get to the rest of them tomorrow night. If not, maybe another one tonight, but otherwise, definitely tomorrow night. All right, so now, I left you with Bobby Dukoff. Like I say, who had the studios. And that studio that he opened in North Miami was interesting because it had been an abandoned or defunct, if you will, food fair. And food fair was a big grocery chain at the time that competed with Publix. And actually, at the time, it's probably bigger. But nonetheless, this particular food fair at 141st Street and Northwest 27th Avenue went out of business. And so Dukoff rented half of it and built this studio, which was, you know, by all accounts, a great studio. And you heard some of the stuff. In fact, Timmy Thomas, Why Can't We Live Together, that was cut there. And a number of several James Brown recordings were done there as well. And then shortly thereafter, Bobby closed the studios and went back into the mouthpiece business because he was producing models. He lived by Kendall, Florida, in South Dade, and he stayed in the business really until he died, just about. But in any he died in 2012. In any event, the James Brown story. So Sid Nathan ultimately did find out what it was, and of course he's the one who had to realize that he was wrong, that maybe he should have let James Brown record an instrumental, and it was a hit on Henry Stone's Dade label, and it got to number 8 on the R&B charts. Nat Kendrick was the drummer for the group, and they just used his name because they couldn't use James Brown's name, and the Swans was what they called it, but ultimately they were the JBs. In any event, that wasn't the last time that Sid Nathan screwed up on predicting the future of James Brown, because James Brown was absolutely convinced that, meanwhile, Nathan, by the way, is releasing instrumentals. Now he's not having a problem with this. But James Brown is convinced that he needs to have an album. And Nathan says no. Said no, 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 no. Because what James had proposed was an album full of live versions that had already been released as singles, but the live version of them, much like Ray Charles' 1960 live album In Person. James Brown heard that and knew that this would be perfect. He could showcase new material, but he could also, you know, spotlight the band, do the stage show. And Sid Nathan just said, "You are out of your mind. Get out of town." Well, so he did, with his own money. In 1962, he goes to the Apollo Theater, and the Wednesday night MC, Fats Gonder, takes the stage and says, "Now, ladies and gentlemen, it's star time." And he introduces James Brown. Of course, the crowd goes just crazy. And the first song is "I'll Go Crazy," and into an 11-minute "Lost Someone" and "Night Train" and all of this. And here again, Sid Nathan had to eat mashed potato pie, humble pie, yes, mashed potato flavor, because it came out in May of 63. And live at the Apollo, James Brown spent 66 weeks on a Billboard album chart, sold over 1 million copy. And so it was James Brown's first hit album. And in many cases, it was his first true crossover success. Yeah. And Sid Nathan had been against it from the start. So there you have that story. And the Nat Kendrick story. And now you know. And Dukoff was a great little studio. And then, of course, like I say, the other big band guy, Mac Emmerman, started Criteria, which was 149th and West Dixie Highway. So they weren't far away from each other. All right, so 888-876-5593 is 8888-Raleigh, and we'll pick it up. We've got James on the south side in the stories, and we got Chuck in Rockford. And tomorrow night, by the way, full show, yep, 3 hours, starting as usual at 10 o'clock Central. Thursday night, I'm not on. Yes, I got the email today. You can have a night off. So apparently it's sports, and more sports on Thursday night. But we'll be back for Monday Night Trivia live, as usual, on Monday night here on WGN Radio. Do, 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 do.
what you think. Don't be shy.
Radio, I'm Raleigh James, and yeah, those are the 16s, and actually they were when they recorded that. When the group got together, they were five teens and a preteen, as one of them was 12, but this was Ed Wells' group in Los Angeles, and they were absolutely everywhere in Los Angeles. That was a big national hit as well, but whether it was, you know, on Art LeBeau's KPOP show, or, you know, from the window at Dolphins of Hollywood, and you know, you name it. There's a Rhythm and Happies on KCOP, Channel 13. They were absolutely everywhere. And they recorded a number of other things, none of which ever did anything. And pretty much then, of course, they grew up and had real jobs. But for a year or so there, man, it was heady. There were actually a couple of years they were everywhere on all the package stuff, and so that was the deal. Now they were on Flip, which was interesting because the record came out in 1957, and that's the same year on the same label on Flip that Richard Berry recorded and released the original Louie Louie. All right, so 888-876-5593 is 8888 Raleigh. And it was Jimmy P. who requested that, and he's given us a call. So, Jimmy P., welcome back to WGN Radio.
Hey, Raleigh, how you doing? You're the best, man. I swear to God, playing all those. I sent in a six-pack the other day, and you hit two of them already.
Absolutely, and you'll hear the other four tomorrow night.
I tried to get in last week. You were talking about Night Train by Jimmy Forrest.
Yeah.
And you also mentioned big bands. Did you ever hear Night Train by Buddy Morrow?
Yes, absolutely I have.
That is, I've got the record. I got the 78. If you want to hear a good song with the brass, I think that's the best recording of Night Train. Buddy Morrow.
Yeah, 1952 on RCA. I've got it.
Well, I got it too, but thank you for what you're doing.
Yeah.
And it's James from the south side of Chicago calls.
Yeah, he's right there.
Ask him what part of the south side of Chicago does he live in.
Well, here, hang on a minute. Don't go anywhere. Stay right where you are. And I think that I can actually achieve this. Let's see. On James, are you with us? James.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Hello?
What part of the what part of south side do you live?
Okay, I live like going north, going near near Beverly, which is also which borders Evergreen Park.
Okay,
I'm very familiar with that area.
All right,
very familiar, James.
Well, good deal. So now you know. All right. So we will play your records, Jimmy P. I promise tomorrow night you'll hear the other four.
And maybe anytime you get a chance.
All right, great. Thanks. Appreciate it. Yes, and Buddy Morrow as well. So, indeed. Let's see. So we've got James here and his cavalcade of 9,832 stories. So which was your favorite, James?
Okay. I would have to say the okay, which was, I could say, curious, was the guy who decided to stick his hand in an airplane.
It's so funny you mentioned that, because I was going to use that as an hour opener teaser. I realized that we have completely run out of pastimes, things to do. So a man sticks his hand into the plane's cup holder in the seat. Now, what I found, you know, the fact that some idiot did this on Singapore Airlines, this does not fully surprise me. What fully surprises me is that they recorded it, and millions of people have been watching it on TikTok.
I like watching somebody's humiliation. It's almost like somebody getting out of you know that they shouldn't do this, and it's like watching somebody set themselves on fire.
Yeah,
and you say, no, you're not doing anything, but you want to be entertained. And it reminded me of a line from, now I know you don't watch movies, but it reminded me of a line, unfortunately, and I realized now why he was going for that line. And Gladiator, when Russell Crowe's Maximus said, "Are you entertained?" And he was like infuriated with because it seemed like all he was doing was like, okay. But his real purpose was that he wanted the emperor on a cold slab.
Well, it's hilarious by all accounts to think that 460,000 people would view this video. And guy clearly is a moron, and you know, has his cohort there filming it, you know, and is willing to put it online, so he has no shame whatsoever. And first thing his cohort said, "Put butter."
No shame, no pain.
Put butter on it. Well, the flight attendant says, "We don't have butter." So okay, well, I think they probably on some of those meals had something slimy, but nonetheless, he ultimately did manage to extricate his hand from the cup holder. And so just alarming. There was a follow-up video, which was even more frightening. So yeah.
But you know, the sad thing is there are these TikTok videos where people, now TikTok is not something they have tried numerous times to invite me to basically subscribe, and I said no. I find that basically an exercise in besides poor taste, and exercise in basically how many neurons am I killing off today?
Yeah, well, you know, maybe that's the way the Chinese government will overtake us. TikTok may, in fact, be their secret weapon. But in the meantime, my favorite comment was the viewer who said, "How the hell do you handcuff yourself to the cup holder?" You know, well, apparently we've now found out very easily. So that he did it doesn't surprise me. That over 460,000 people want to see it stuns me.
Yeah, it says, okay. It reminds me of a line that Eddie Murphy once uttered. Okay, he said, "You go and call your mother. I'll stay here." Did she slap you? Then you said it right.
Yeah.
And it is unfortunately, it's almost like somebody wants to see blood, gore, and we're talking a good, decent horror movie.
Yeah, either. Yeah. You know that's the case. All right. So yes, I agree. That was the piece de resistance. I I saw that story and thought, yep, it's come to this.
And basically, I almost felt like that expression that Tom Selleck's character on Bluebirds, when he finds something that's thoroughly just simply exasperating or doesn't make sense, he says, "And so we have it here."
Yeah.
And you say, And then there's some other ones in there that just simply use other story, and where you say, we really are okay. We don't have to worry about attention deficit. Global warming, because okay, at this rate we will kill off enough neurons that we won't
be here to see it. Exactly.
We won't be able to solve even at the level of chimpanzees will be better. Are able than we will.
Proving that we have nothing else to think about, we, of course, have several stories regarding Taylor Swift, not herself, but people, in fact, commenting on her, including the fuss that Elon Musk created when he suggested that she put her music on his platform, which is X, that used to be something else. Twitter. And then Valerie Bertinelli weighing in, commenting on her latest romance. I thought, yep, there's absolutely nothing going on of note in America, in the world, never mind, because we have, in fact, Taylor Swift news. Frightening. Absolutely frightening.
And I think we can thank, the Bears for at least partially helping that along.
Yeah.
By them getting slaughtered, and then, of course, Swifties, latest flame, which is now apparently flamed out.
It's already gone. Well, I don't have to read that, I guess, then. It's over already.
That at least that's what they claim. Supposedly she's gone. I'm like, I have never really listened to any of her music.
Millions of people have. You know, that's one thing. Can't take it away from her. She's the biggest thing since the Beatles, probably bigger than them, and millions and millions of records.
Unfortunately, the one thing, of course, the reason why I could always remember is that Kanye West went thoroughly insane.
That's a whole chapter. Absolutely. Yes. Yeah, so, but meanwhile, while we're all worried about the stars, we've got some guy on death row for junk science. So maybe we can talk about that one when you call next. And thank you for every one of the stories.
Okay,
thanks.
I mean, I gotta admit, junk science.
Yes. It's come to this. All right. Thanks, James. Appreciate it.
The rush to the bottom.
Yeah, shoot. Well, we've gotten there. All right. Apologies to Chuck from Rockford for not getting in there. Now, we thank Adam for keeping us on the air. We thank John for screening your calls. I thank you for calling and keeping me company tonight. Tomorrow night is a full show, 3 big hours. So if Chuck calls in, we'll definitely get him on the air. And you too. Until then, that's a wrap. I'm Raleigh James. It's WGN Radio.